BetterHelp Online Therapy bought this 30-second ad to remind you, right now, wherever you are, to unclench your jaw, relax your shoulders, take a deep breath in and out. Feels better, right? That's 15 seconds of self-care. Imagine what you could do with more. Visit betterhelp.com/randompod for 10% off your first month of therapy. No pressure, just help. But for now, just relax.
It's time. The British and Irish Lions journey down under.
This is a fairy tale!
Legends will be written. And Lions will be made. The British and Irish Lions series. Watch every match, including all three tests, live on Sky Sports.
Absolutely incredible!
Available to stream with Now. 18 plus UK only. Broadband 2.5 megabytes per second required.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Tim's here. I'm here. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate the support. Holy hell, and it happened again. Another fantastic game. My voice is a little hoarse, Tim. Can you tell?
Yeah, I can tell.
I got roped into umpiring my kid's game last night. The ump kind of fell through, so I was screaming at 11-year-olds and 9 and 10-year-olds all night. You're safe. You're up all one. So that's why my voice is a little hoarse. And I was screaming at the TV all night because it was such an entertaining game. It was just fantastic. But before we get into that, I want to tell you, I had a little bit of a, my kids are mean and they say things that are very sweet. But so they all have been getting these braces. Did you get braces when you were a kid, Tim?
No, I did Invisalign later on, but
same thing, yeah. Same type of deal, fixing your teeth. So I'm 4 for 4 here with kids going to the dentist and orthodontist, and magically they need braces and Invisalign and all these expanders and retainers and all these things. The doctor has a direct link to my bank account. Like, he just funnels money out of my account every single year. So anyways, now the new thing is they'll come up to me and they go, let me see your teeth. And I go, why? Let me see your teeth. And so I show them my teeth and they go, oh, those are very crooked. You did not have braces when you were a kid. And then they'll show me their teeth and like, see how straight mine are now? Yeah, yours are really bad, Dad. Like, that one's behind that one and that one's, and I'm just like, why are we doing this right now? Why is this happening? And they've been doing it with my hair. They go like, well, you're starting to get a bald spot at the top. I'm like, why is this happening? Why are we talking about this? And it's just like, they're being sweet and innocent, but my confidence, Tim, has taken a beating. I need to go on another trip to Canada to boost my confidence because these kids are ruthless. I don't know about listeners, but yeah, let me know in the comments because kids are just super honest to a fault where I have bad teeth, I'm bald and I'm fat and I should shave my chest hair. And I just have all kinds of issues and I have gray hair too, which is bad. My oldest said, my hair looks like it's a bird nest with a bald spot. I'm like, that's nice. Thank you. Thank you, Ava. I appreciate that. So it's just, I'm a little sensitive right now, and usually I'm not, but when it comes from young kids, because you know they don't lie, they're telling the truth. So now I'm going to talk like this, covering up my teeth. Got bad teeth, got bad jibs. Who cares? These kids. So spoiled. Everybody's got braces. Nobody got braces when I was a kid. It wasn't a thing.
I know. I was just thinking that, like, yeah, your reward for being a good dad and doing that for your kids is that they point out that you didn't have that when you were their age. It's just funny.
Oh, just this damn orthodontist is just unrelenting. Every single kid. I'm like, oh, yeah, she's going to need work. Why? Why? Her teeth are fine. So anyways, moving on. Let's talk about the game because what a game it was. Game 4, must win for the Edmonton Oilers, Tim. Must win. And we talked about that. Last episode, you can't go back to Edmonton. Well, you probably could have because they ripped off 3 straight last year, but I feel like Florida maybe learned from its lessons and they wouldn't lose 3 straight again. And they needed to win this game. And boy, oh boy, you expect a team that has their backs against a wall to come out just flying. with a sense of urgency, with passion, and just take it to the opposing team. Not the case whatsoever. Florida dominated the first period. I was shocked after 20 minutes. First of all, the shots were just glaringly pro-Florida. It was 17-7. The chances, the offensive zone time, the penalties, everything was leaning heavily towards Florida. Were you surprised by how well Florida started?
Yes and no. It's funny. I have a buddy here in Charlotte who loves to gamble on these games. And he asked me, when it's hockey time, he asked my opinion. He's like, hey, what do you think? So he asked me before the game, do you think you like the Oilers to tie this one up? I was like, yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to go 7. I think they tie this up now. After the first period, it's 3-0. I texted him. I'm like, I'm sorry, man. This one's over. Like, sorry about your $100 or whatever. And yeah, the ice was tilted. I think one of the things the Oilers do is, and I don't want to spend too much time talking only about them because you have to give the Florida Panthers credit, but the Oilers make things so difficult for themselves sometimes. And last night that was the case where it was Stuart Skinner was not playing great, obviously, but I don't think he was one of the better players on their team in the first period. It's just, yeah, it did not go their way. And a lot of credit to Florida for just creating offense. The two goals from Tkachuk and then that Lundell goal. You're at the point now, like later in the first, you're trying to get to the buzzer, right? You're trying to ride it out, like regroup in the intermission. And then that Lundell goal felt like a nail in the coffin.
Well, they take out John Klingberg and you put in Troy Stetcher. And really, Edmonton has 5 defensemen that they trust. And that 6th guy has just been this nagging nuisance of who do we trust? You have to have 6 defensemen. You can't roll 5. It's very difficult in the playoffs, especially with how physical this series has been. So Troy Stetcher, poor guy, gets put out there last minute of the first period. Puck gets dumped behind the net. And you can just tell a defenseman when he's not confident. I've been there. You know, you just don't want to touch the puck. Your team's already down 2. You just want to get to intermission. Gets rimmed behind the net, and he's just, you can tell he just had no confidence going back for that puck. And he takes the hit, rightfully so, Verhaeghe. His stick does hit his visor, but he's not used to the battle. He's not used to the intensity of the series. He hasn't played in any game. So he immediately tries to sell it, bails out. Verhaeghe picks it up, throws it out front, Lundell scores. It's the coach, I don't want to blame the coach, but he shouldn't be put in that situation. The last minute of the period is so important. It's just you're trying to get to the intermission. You're trying not to get scored on, or you're trying to score. And I've been told this by coaches throughout history. You just got to lock up the last 3 minutes, the first 3 minutes. Those are the 2 most important stages of every single game. And poor kid gets put out there. I don't think he played a shift the rest of the game. I think he played 4 minutes in the first period. I'm serious. I think they stapled his behind to the bench, and that was it. And even his reaction after they scored, he drops his stick in his glove and he looks at the ref. It's like, it's the Stanley Cup Finals. Have you not been watching? Have you not seen what's going on? So I don't want to bury him too bad because he's put in an unenviable situation of going out there, all the intensity, all the history. And Verhaeghe is not the biggest guy, but he finishes his check, throws it up front 3-0. But I agree. I thought that was it. That was the game. Skinner had played fantastic up until that point. I thought. I don't know a goal he could have saved. The Tkachuk goals were great, and then this goal, he had no chance. So I thought it was done. But boy, Tim, were we wrong. This Edmonton Oilers team, we get criticized. You don't talk about Edmonton enough. You don't talk about Florida enough, this, that, and the other. I'm sorry. We're doing our best. But this Oilers team, they showed some perseverance, Tim, that I don't think they had last year. What do you think?
Yeah, they came out much better in the second half, and it turned out, you know, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but after the game, they said that Corey Perry gave a little bit of a speech to the locker room. You know, they're down 3-0. They're on the road. You can't go down 3-1 in the series. You need this game. This is a guy who's been there before. This is what, his 5th or 4th final in 5 years, a 5th and 6th. Like, it's crazy. He's been here. So whatever he said, it worked. And they come out better in the second period, and the other big decision that's coming out in the second period is that Skinner now is stapled to the bench and Calvin Bécard is in. So Bécard is the backup, but he's 6-0 in the playoffs entering this game. And you think now that this is probably desperation mode. Like, they're 3-0, they're down 3-0, the starting goaltender is pulled, their backs are against the wall, but they're not really playing like it. They're playing with confidence.
Yeah, and let's just go back to Corey Perry, because I don't want to brush past this. But he was, when he got to the Oilers, it was almost an afterthought. It's like, okay, we're picking up this veteran. We're not sure where he fits in. The last few years, he's been in 5 straight Stanley Cup finals. But the last few years, he's been just kind of secondary, almost a third option. And he went to the Edmonton Oilers last year. Everybody just kind of, whatever, ho-hum. This year for them, he's been such a great player, and everybody knows what he does. He picks it up in the playoffs. In the regular season, he's okay. But in my eyes, Tim, yes, McDavid is just, it's amazing. Yes, Draisaitl is amazing. But when you look at all the goals that the Oilers have scored, all the chances that they generate, all the big plays, he's around, man. Whether it's just like a little touch pass to Corey Perry and he fires across to Draisaitl for the OT winner in game one, whether it's him just being around the net, whether it's a tip, a big goal, this, that, and the other, you show me a guy who does more with limited ice time. He doesn't get the big minutes that the guys get. He only plays 15 minutes a game. Knobloch is very smart with how he deploys Corey Perry. He's pretty much a one-trick pony. He's an offensive guy. He gets a lot of offensive zone face-offs. He's never rarely in the defensive zone. And for the amount of time that he's on the ice, he's so productive. And after every single goal you watch, you go back and you see the replay. You go, holy crap, Corey Perry's sitting right beside Bob. Oh, he's right in front of him. Oh, what a play by Corey Perry. He's just always around the net, and he's a part of every single goal, it seems like. I think he was on for 4 of the 5 goals last night for the Oilers. Like, he's just always there. He's like a Joe Pavelski, where it's just like, oh, there's number 90. There's Corey Perry. So what a pickup by them last year, getting him off waivers from the Chicago Blackhawks. He's been so great for this team.
Yeah, I mean, he's not quite a power forward at this point in his career because he's not skating and hitting like he used to, obviously, but he's still playing physical. He skates pretty well. He's some great one-touch passes, including that one to Draisaitl in overtime. And what he's doing is creating offense in front of the net. He's being physical. He's making smart passes. He's doing the things that a power forward would do in limited role. And it's taken a lot of pressure off another guy that I think they were hoping to get that type of action from, Evander Kane, where if Corey Perry wasn't doing what he's doing, we're all jumping on Evander saying, why aren't you creating this? But he's kind of off the hook a little bit because Corey Perry's playing that role.
Yeah, and Kane just, for some reason, cannot get out of his own way. He's demoted to the fourth line last night. Like, it's where he belongs because he can't stop taking penalties. He's not disciplined. And I know Florida's power play. We have a running joke where I watch the game with my friends. It's like Edmonton is so good when Florida has the power play because Florida dominates 5-on-5 and then they get the power play and then everything just shuts down. So we have a joke where Evander Kane is Florida's best player because he keeps putting him on the PP. But he can't keep playing. And Chris Knobloch finally realized that and he demoted him to the fourth line. And I think that's where he belongs because you can't be trusted. And you're right. Corey Perry has eased that result because he's been that guy. He's been the guy who's been fighting. He's been the guy who goes to the net. He's in every single scrum. He's standing up to Gadjevich. He's the guy who is the power forward. And he's 40 years old, for Pete's sake. So it's just really neat to see how he is a transition his game. And we've talked about this before, but just embrace that role. He knows where to score. I think that's a gift and a skill that he's learned over the last 20 years. He knows where the goals are going to come from, and he goes and plants himself in front of the net, and he's making things happen. Connor Brown now is on the first line, but when they need a goal, Perry takes a spot on the right side. Connor Brown drops down, got McDavid, the Nuge, and Perry. So that's the offensive line. I think Connor Brown is there just to give Perry a break because the guy can't play 20 minutes. He just can't. He's too old. But good for him. What else are we going to talk about? We got to talk about Skinner being pulled. Like, we need to address this situation because there's a lot of people who are clamoring him for not even starting game 4. There was a large swath of people who just said, we're done. Enough is enough. We saw what he did in game 3. He gives up 5 goals. We need to start fresh. Pickard was 6-0, Tim, this playoffs. He's undefeated. He lost a net because he got injured. Well, those people got their wish because Stuart Skinner was pulled after the first period, and Calvin Pickard started the second period. And holy, it's amazing the mindset of players, right? Because you would think, oh, new goalie, you don't even look behind you, ho-hum. You can tell that the players love when he's in net. They embrace him. They want to play good for him. And with Stuart Skinner, they like him, but it doesn't seem like they have the same enjoyment when he makes a big save, or they have the, you know what I mean? Like, even after the game when they're celebrating, like, every single guy is so happy that he's in the net and they won the game and he made the save and he played great. Whereas when Stuart Skinner gets a shutout or they win, it's not the same. I don't know what's going on in that locker room, but Picard, he's got that room. Think of bold move by Knobloch, Tim. Would you have been able to pull that?
move. Yeah, I think that was obviously the right move. And they even talked on the broadcast about how they play with more confidence when Picard's in net. And I think there's also that whole, like, and you know, whether or not it's Skinner's fault, there's just that fresh start mentality. When you have a new goalie, new period, and you just, all you want is, you want the next one. Just get the next one. And they did that. They got the next one, the Nuge snipe in the back of the crossbar and out. That was electric. Then you have the Darnell Nurse, bad angle shot over Bobrovsky's shoulder. They get the next one again with that Podkolzin greasy rebound. And all of a sudden it's tied in the second period. And just they've done what we didn't think they could do.
Well, let's talk about that second period first.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I want to talk about that second period because I think Paul Maurice gets a pass a lot of the times just because he's very calm. He won the Stanley Cup last year. He's a likable guy. He seems to say all the great things, and he's a coach you want to play for. But after game one, when they had that lead, And they eased back in the second period and allowed Edmonton to get back into the game, and then they eventually won in overtime. You would have thought that he would have learned. You could tell Florida was different in the second period. And I know it's hard to sustain that pressure and that energy and that amount of just effort. But I wonder what was said between the first and the second period. Because it seemed to me that they changed their game plan. The defensemen weren't as aggressive. The forwards weren't hounding on the forecheck. Everybody seemed to pull back. If you're going to beat one of us, you got to beat all of us. You're not going to get a 2-on-1. You aren't going to get a breakaway. We're not going to do odd man advantages. When you tell a player to play safe, it changes everything. And especially players who are dogs, like the Panthers are dogs. They're at their best when they're hounding and they're chasing you. And they're tracking the puck and they're trying to get physical and they're trying to get in your grill and they're trying to turn pucks over. If you tell a dog like that, play defense, they don't know what to do. It's hard. It's hard to transition from, okay, I'm going to hound you and I'm not giving up until I get that damn puck, to all of a sudden you're like, I got to sit in one spot and I got to stay here and I got to wait till the puck comes to me. It's difficult. It's difficult to turn that switch on and off. And you could tell Edmonton just started picking them apart. It was just the pucks in deep, they got offensive zone time, they got confident, and the next thing you know, it's 1-2-3. And it's just like, why did you even change your game plan? Why? Stay aggressive. I know two of the goals were on the power play, but the reason you got on the power play is because you were aggressive. You created penalties, you created chaos in the offensive zone. And I think he doesn't get enough blame that he should, because that was the second time he's done it this series. If you really think about it, Florida should have the cup right now. They had two leads, large leads, and Edmonton comes back and wins it, both in overtime. So that's my first take of the second period. My second take is Bobrovsky was bad. He was. Nurse, that goal should never go in. I criticize right. Skinner when he lets the Reinhardt goal in short side. The Nurse goal was worse because he had time to square up. He was ready. There was no traffic. It wasn't a bang-bang play. And he gets beat high. He should not let that shot in. Even the Podkolzin goal, I feel like he probably could have saved it, but he didn't. So Bob needs to be better. It is what it is. He's a great goaltender, but when you have to call it like you see it, I don't think he was good. I think Skinner was the better goaltender and Picard was a better goaltender. Bobrovsky needs to be better if Florida wants to win the Stanley Cup. So that's my takeaway from the second period. I think Maurice blew it. He changed the game plan. And that cost them the game, just like it did in game one. And you can't do that. They are dogs, so Tim. They're dogs when they get going. And you could tell, at times, I was like, where the hell's Marchand? Where's Bennett? Where are these guys? Oh, they're sitting at the red line waiting. Waiting. Have you ever trained a junkyard dog, Tim? No. You cake eaters don't even know what that is. A junkyard dog, you got to let them loose. You got to let them go. You can't tell them to sit still. You let him go. And that's what happened last night. Marchand and Bennett and Tkachuk and Gajewicz and all these guys. Oh, you stay in one spot and let him come to you. It doesn't work. They blew it in game one and now they blew it in game four. So hopefully he learns his lesson. When you're up 3-1 or 3-0 or 4-1, you continue to bury that team. They will take chances and you'll get odd man rushes and you bury them 5-1, 6-1. That's how you win games. And it's just strange that Maurice didn't know that. So I blame to him, blame to Bobrovsky for this loss. That's where I'm throwing it.
Yeah, and I think you have to, I mean, you know, be just as critical of the Panthers for blowing this lead as you can, as you praise the Oilers for coming back last night. And one of the things, you know, the cliche is playing not to lose instead of playing to win. I think that was their problem after the first period. But one of the things I keep thinking about is the Oilers, it's 3-0 after one. You're playing on the road. Last year, this would have been over. This game would have been over. It was all about like, okay, let's build momentum for game five and move on mentally. Don't let it get you too down, whatever. And this just comes from the experience of the heartbreak of what they went through last year. And we've seen this with so many teams over the last 5-10 years is like the lessons you learn when you're that close and you don't get it done, the toughness, the mental toughness, the physical toughness, it just really was on display last night. I'm so impressed with this team that they were able to come back. And even like the attitude, like when Nurse sniped, and he's dropping the big FU at the Panthers bench. Like that's that hatred that you want to see that, I don't know. I was just really impressed with their ability to do that last year in the comparison to last night in the comparison to last year.
Yeah. And McDavid still hasn't scored four games.
I know.
If you were to tell me at the start of this series and you go, yeah, 4 games in McDavid, not one goal. You go, oh, this series is over for the maybe 3-1. Like maybe they eke one out. It's been really nice, and it's been hot and cold, which is what depth does. They're not consistent. That's why they're depth. But they've been good, and they stepped up last night. Pod Colson is terrible in game three. Absolutely terrible. He comes back, and he has a great game, gets that tying goal. Solid all game. Same with Kapanen. I thought he was awful in game three. He played really good in game four, and it just goes down the line. I thought Frederick played a stronger game. The fourth line was solid. Definitely not a weakness. So you have to give props to those guys because everybody was dogging on him, and so was I, and they stepped up. They played really, really good because McDavid, he's getting chances. He gets right down Broadway, slap shot in the third period. The seas parted. Moses stepped in and said, here you go, Connor. Here's your chance. And he couldn't bury it. He hits Corey Perry right in the ass, and then Perry almost buries the goal. But he's getting chances, but for whatever reason, he is not finishing them. So these guys, oh, are they saving his bacon? Because imagine if they don't win game one and they don't win game four. Connor McDavid goes down as a huge failure. Didn't score in the Stanley Cup Finals. You lost again. Now all of a sudden he has a chance to just rewrite history and say he carried this team and wins. He's getting assists. Everybody knows that. But like, can we criticize Marner and Matthews and those players for not scoring? David needs to score. Like he needs to. But yes, I want to look at the positive. The three goals were terrific. And then you go to the last, 5 minutes, and Steve Yzerman, do you think he watches? Do you think he's watching? And what is he thinking when Wallman just gets that puck on the top of the circle? And everybody knows what's happening. Everybody knows what's about to happen. And he just gets a nice pass across, and he flipping hammers it. And you got written here, PK Subban style. I don't know what that means, but is Subban used to do this?
Yeah, the way so Kapanen's got the puck at the top of the circle and Wallman's winding up, stick is fully elevated. He's like screaming for it. He wants it so bad. It reminded me of Subban because Subban used to have these one-timer overtime goals, whatever. He's jumping up and down because he wants the puck so bad. He's trying to get the guy's attention. That's kind of what it felt like for Wallman, and he put everything into that. It was so good, so hard, and it was just electric. And yeah, it was just really cool to see.
He was tickling the roof. Players hate that because it's like, yeah, I see you. You don't have to like, we get it. But even the lead up to that goal, and talk about Florida just not playing Florida style hockey. The Nuge, who the last time I checked his stats was like 5'10", 160. He's behind the net with Seth Jones, Nico Mikkola, Bennett, and Barkov.
BetterHelp Online Therapy bought this 30-second ad to remind you, right now, wherever you are, to unclench your jaw, relax your shoulders, take a deep breath in and out. Feels better, right? That's 15 seconds of self-care. Imagine what you could do with more. Visit betterhelp.com/randompod for 10% off your first month of therapy. No pressure, just help. But for now, just relax.
It's time
The British and Irish Lions journey down under.
This is a fairy tale.
Legends will be written. And Lions will be made. The British and Irish Lions series. Watch every match, including all three tests, live on Sky Sports.
Absolutely incredible.
Available to stream with Now. 18 plus UK only. Broadband 2.5 megabytes per second required.
He somehow, some way, manages to just tie up the puck for 5, 6, 7 seconds, allowing the whole Edmonton line to change. Two forwards and two defensemen. They get a full-blown change, and then he forces them with enough pressure to turn it over. So it just was such a lazy play by Florida where they almost felt like, okay, well, you're going to get the puck, or you're going to get the puck, or the Nuge is going to give up, or this and that. Barkov will get it and skate it out. This goal should have never happened. It's bizarre that these guys just flip the switch off, and then next thing you know, it's in the back of the net. So there's a lot of sequence of events that I just look at. I'm like, why? Why are we doing this? It's the Stanley Cup Finals. It's the third period. It's 3-3. You want to get it to overtime or get the game winner. And that was a huge blunder by the Florida Panthers there. There's more blame to be passed on, and I'll talk about this guy in the OT winner, but great play by Edmonton. Great play by the Nuge. Even him. I don't know if he makes that play a couple of years ago. He might have just changed. Okay, whatever. Change. You guys get a free breakout. I'm going to get off the ice. And next thing you know, he's down there battling behind the other team's net, wasting time, trying to get the puck, and then it's in the back of their net because he doesn't just take the easy way out and change it. So good for Nuge. Really, really good play by him. They get the win. Panthers pull their goalie to 2 minutes left. And the one thing I'll say about the Panthers, they really don't give up either. And they're not good 6-on-5. They're not good on the power play. I'll say it. I think their power play is atrocious, and I don't think they have a set system when it's 6-on-5. They look out of sorts. It's just like, who is the trigger man? What is our strategy? Most power plays have a strategy. You know, it's like we go low to high and we try to get a shot in the slot, or we want McDavid to cut through. We're going Draisaitl back door, or we got Ovechkin on the wing, or we're going hammer time from Hedman up top. Everybody has a preferred shooter or preferred play. When I was in San Jose, it was low to high. It was Bernsey down to Couture up to Pavelski in the slot. That was it. I don't think Florida has that. And I don't think they know what to do. They get on the ice, it's just like, okay, well, I'm going to control it. And Edmonton's such a good job of pressuring them and creating turnovers and getting it down the ice. But they managed to tie the game on such another terrible play. We talk about the fourth goal for Edmonton. Another terrible play from Edmonton. It gets dumped in, and then Picard, poor kid, he just flubs it. And then Florida picks up the puck, and okay, this is my pet peeve. I'm sorry I'm talking a lot, but this is a pet peeve of mine, and we're going to see it on the overtime goal too. Have I talked about it before on the show?
I don't know what you're going to say. So,
defensemen who leave their feet to block a pass.
Yeah.
So, Calvin Picard gets the puck, and he tries to rim it around. Great. Should have got it in the glass. Should have put a little more mustard on it. He didn't. That's fine. Florida picks up the puck and bounces to the slot. Sam Bennett has it. Evan Bouchard immediately drops to his knees. Immediately. Right away. And his stick's on the ice. What this does is it eliminates him from the play. Absolutely. You can't go stick on puck. Your stick is not active because it's sitting on the ice and you're out of the play. Sam Bennett sees this and he goes, perfect. I have a little more time. And he passes it right across to Reinhardt. If Evan Bouchard stays on his feet, he can extend his stick. He can get it on Bennett's stick, and he forces that pass to somebody else, or he deflects it. He is able to be active with it. I just don't know why coaches teach this anymore. It drives me crazy. Every time I watch the game, whether it's a 2-on-1, whether it's a 2-on-2, whether it's a 1-on-3, which we'll talk about in a second, the defensemen go down, and it completely takes them out of the game. And I don't know if you've noticed, the players are so good these days. Everybody knows how to sauce. Everybody has incredible patience. And if I'm a player, what would you rather face? A guy who's prone on the ice with his stick on the ice and I can sauce it over him, or just be a little patient and he slides right through? Or would you rather play against a player whose stick is active, he can move, and I don't know where he's going because he's still able to move? I would rather play against a guy who just dives on the ice, 100%.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was the Nugent Hopkins goal in the second where Seth Jones went down to block it. And he was just perfectly lined up in front of Bobrovsky. And he got eliminated himself from the play and screened the goalie all in one slick move. And yeah, you're totally right.
It's a pet peeve for me. So on this play, Bennett or Bouchard goes down. Bennett sees it. He passes it to Reinhardt. Reinhardt could chuck, flips, flubs, bounces, this, that, and the other. Reinhardt gets the goal, slides it by Picard, 4-4. It's a play that should not happen. It's a fortuitous bounce. It's a bad play by Bouchard, but it's 4-4 going into overtime, and you think, okay, all is right in the world if you're a Florida Panthers fan. You're up 3-0. You manage to tie it up. We're going to go into overtime, and we're going to win the game. And they almost did, Tim. Oh, my goodness. They almost did. Talk about big saves. Sam Bennett gets the puck in the slot, and Calvin Picard pushes across and just gets enough of it. Just enough.
Barely. Yeah.
And it glances off his glove, glances off the crossbar, and he saves the day. And I don't think Stuart Skinner makes that save. I'll just say that. I don't think he has a side-to-side movement to get across. We've talked about it in shows past. His lateral movement is not there. It wasn't there last game when Bennett juked him with just a shoulder fake and he was dead to rights. It wasn't there when he was diving on nobody when Marchand scored. The guy doesn't have good side-to-side movement. Picard comes across and he gets just enough of it. And Edmonton's alive. And then they pick up the puck and they're going the other way. And Ekholm throws up Corey Perry, dishes it to Draisaitl. And okay. We talked about Bouchard. And this is where Nico Mikkola, I'm going to really get after him because I like the way he plays. Like, I'm going to try to calm myself because I want to scream, but my voice is hoarse and I don't want to swear on the air. What are we doing? You are a NHL caliber top tier defenseman, right, Tim? That's the category he's in now?
I would say so.
Plays 25 minutes a night. Draisaitl is getting hounded on the backside. So he's fending a guy off with his left arm. He has one hand on a stick. He has no speed because he just came off the bench. You're in the middle. Corey Perry's weak side. You have two guys aggressively back checking. What is the play here when you see a Leon Draisaitl with one hand on a stick? What options does he have, really, when a guy's draped on his back? His options are just to throw a dribbler on the net. His options are to stop up and to try to find a trailer. Or his options are to take it to the net. That's it. He's not passing it to Corey Perry. He can't because he's got a guy draped on his back. So Nico Mikkola reads all of this. He's a very good defenseman. And I would love to hear his reasoning for this. I'm going to slide right into my goaltender. Why are we doing this? Leon just flubs it like one-handed. Not a lot of mustard on it at all. Just throws it at the net. That's all he can do. Goes off Mikkola's pad in the back of the net. If I'm Bobrovsky, I'm shedding my gear and beating the tar out of Mikkola right there because it's an easy play, Tim. It's an easy play. And as a defenseman, why? You could have just stayed on your feet and just picked the pass up. It's so stupid that they slide. And I'm sorry I'm so like worked up about this and passionate about it, but it's just like, it's why? Tell me, listeners, why that's taught. I don't have a kid who plays hockey anymore. Why are we doing this? Mikkola did that on the goal. He got outbattled by Podkolzin for the third goal. He's just terrible. Terrible game for him. He needs to be better. And if I'm Bobrovsky, I'm telling all my defensemen, stay on your feet. Stay on your feet. Take away the pass backdoor. That's all I want you to do. You're only making things worse for me. You're making it harder. So stop sliding. It just does nothing. Watch the game, everybody. Watch the game and see how many players do that. And then keep tabs on when it works and when it doesn't. Because the majority of time it doesn't work. There's the odd time where it's like, oh, he got it with the stick. What a great play. Every other time, you slide into the effing corner and the puck's in the back of your net. Or it hits you and goes in the back of the net. Or it hits you and it's bouncing and it's complete chaos. It never works the majority of the time. Mikkola, you stink. Stay on your feet, kid. You got good hands. Use them. You got big feet. Just get in the lane, man. Like, I just... it bothers me.
So Draisaitl obviously gets credit with the goal. Just fourth overtime winner in these playoffs, which is crazy. It's the record for NHL playoff overtime goals in a single postseason. And now we find ourselves entering game five. It's a best of three. We're going back to Edmonton tomorrow night. This is what we want. As a hockey fan that don't really have a lot of dog in the fight, four incredible games. Three of them went to overtime. Like, it's super close. It's back and forth. We're seeing heroes. We're seeing villains. It's a lot of fun. The biggest question for me, or one of the biggest questions, I should say, is the Edmonton Oilers. Who do you go with between the pipes in game five? Is this easy for you?
Yeah. What do you think? Yeah, it's okay. Picard.
So 100%. I'm assuming you're going to go with Picard. And I think you probably do, because especially if you're Knobloch, it's an easy choice. Because going back to Skinner with Skinner would be you sticking your head out, right? Like, Picard, you won't, no one's going to criticize you for starting Picard. But the thing with Stuart Skinner is that we've seen so many times, including this postseason and going back to last year, is like, he's so good at bouncing back from bad games and then stopping 40 out of 41. He's done it time and time again, including against this team. Don't you feel like, if you look at his record in games 1 through 3 versus games 4 through 7, he's a different goaltender. He's very, very good. And don't you think he could just be just as likely to put a shutout in game 5?
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. But Picard is 7 wins, 0 losses. He has done nothing to show you that he's not going to play well. He has numbers are pretty similar to Skinner's. Like, I agree. His save percentage isn't great. It's sub 9. His goals against is almost 2.7. So he's not a terrific goaltender. But if Stuart Skinner starts game 5, there will be riots in the street in Edmonton. There will be. They will call for Knobloch's head. This is a coach's nightmare of a decision. Because if you start Skinner and you lose, you're fired 100%. That's the decision. Like, you're fired. It's easy to just say, I'm going Picard. There's no chance Stuart Skinner sees the ice again in this series. None whatsoever. Unless Calvin just absolutely lays an egg in the first period. Then you go back to Stu. But this is his net moving forward. Yeah, that's an easy decision. I think the bigger decision now is, who do you put on defense? Do you put Klingberg back in? Stetcher was awful. I don't think he played more than 5 minutes.
4 minutes, 18 seconds.
What's that?
4 minutes, 18 seconds. It's crazy.
Yeah, I don't think he played in the second and third or overtime. I think they stapled him to the bench. So I think that's an easy decision. You bring Klingberg back in, but he still will be on a very, 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 very short leash. And I loved what he did with Jeff Skinner. Bringing him in, he had energy. He had a couple chances. I think he was hounding the puck. This is a great lineup. Edmonton is playing very, very solid. And then for Florida, I think you just, you know, chalk it up, whatever. You lost. You should have won, but you lost. And then steady as she goes, best of three. It's a great series. It's a great problem to be in for the Florida Panthers. You can see a way you could have won every single game. You could have won game 1. You could have won game 4. You can pinpoint where you went wrong. Moving forward, here we go. Bob needs to be better. We need to be more aggressive. That's it. Edmonton, same thing. You can pinpoint where you went wrong in each and every game. These are two great teams. I think this is what you get when you have two great teams. There's flows, there's ebbs and flows of momentum. And I fully expect, like we talked about before the series started, for this to go 7. They're just two great teams, Tim.
Yeah, the Panthers, I feel like my heart still says that they're just, my head anyway, thinks like, okay, they're the better team. They bounce back. They're unflappable. They let this one, you know, get by them, but then it's not going to happen again. But the thing with Edmonton is that in years past, in order to win a playoff game, they kind of needed everything to just go their way. Right, they needed 97-29. They needed the bounces. They needed a couple of big saves. And last night, things did not go their way, and they won anyway. And that's the kind of thing that makes me think this team's a little bit different. Plus the fact that we still haven't seen a McDavid game. We still haven't seen him score a goal. We still haven't seen him dominate. And he had some good plays. I think you have to give credit to Barkov and the Panthers for containing him. But you also, he's going to get his chances. And he had that great play where he split the D. And he goes the backhand to forehand, and then Bobrovsky's just spread eagle, makes the save. Like, that's a huge, huge save. So I don't know. This is going to go 7. This could still go either way, and I'm very excited to watch it.
Yeah, he's almost tied with Zach Hyman in goals. Hyman has 5 and hasn't played because he's injured. McDavid has 6. Like, he's tied with the Nuge and Kane. Bouchard has more. Perry has more. Drysdale has more. So Connor Brown's 1 behind him. It's been great for the Oilers to just lean on their depth a little bit. But I think we're breezing past the fact that, yeah, Barkov has been incredible in Florida, getting the matchups with Connor McDavid and shutting him down for the most part. Like, I know he got a couple assists, but boy, great job by him. It'll be interesting to see him let loose in Edmonton when he gets freed from that kind of purgatory, which is playing against Sasha Barkov and his great Selke play. But we're going back to Edmonton. What are your thoughts? How does this series end up? Because we both picked Florida in seven. Are we going to go Edmonton, Florida, then game seven back in Edmonton? Or do you think Florida is going to take the next one?
I think Florida, Edmonton, and then we have a toss up in game seven. And I'll make my prediction for that when it comes to it. But yeah, I still like Florida to win the next one.
All right, yeah, it's nice that it's a quick turnaround because they play on Saturday. Very bizarre how the NHL is working. 3 days off between games in Florida.
Right.
And then you have a quick turnaround when you have a massive flight crossing borders, passports, all that crap. And it's a long flight. So that's very strange. They're going to fly today. They'll touch down. They'll probably have a light skate and then back at it tomorrow. So it's an interesting schedule. It's good for the Florida Panthers. I think that's very, very beneficial to them to not think on it. Let's go. Let's play. We're just going to wake up and play another game, basically.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about some quick hits, and we'll start with the NHL awards that were announced this week. Speaking of Barkov, he won the Selke. No big surprise there. He was the favorite. He's the best two-way player in the game right now. The Vezina, another not surprise, Connor Hellebuck. He was, you know, twice as good as the next guy up. So that's huge, huge for him. Calder, this one was fun. Lane Hutson, again, the right pick. I think probably if there was an obvious pick, it would be him. You had Mishkov there. You had Celebrini there. You had Dustin Wolf right there. But it was Hutson getting that one. The Jack Adams for best head coach, Spencer Carberry. I think that was also the right pick. I think what he did with that Washington team, you have to give a lot of credit to GM, obviously, too, and that turnover last summer. But they exceeded every expectation. They played with a lot of swagger, and he was a huge part of that. And then we kind of get into my gripes, and one of them is the Norris. Cale Makar is the best defenseman alive right now. He might be the best defenseman of all time. When all is said and done, I really wanted Zach Werenski to win this award. I think if there was an MVP where it's value as opposed to total talent among defensemen, it's Werenski. I think he was more important to his team by leaps and bounds than Makar was to his. But I get the idea of like, okay, he's the best player, best defenseman. You got to give it to him. But I was really fingers crossed for Werenski there.
Yeah, I actually thought Werenski would win too, just because I think he's an all-around better defenseman. This year, he was. So I thought he played terrific on a bad Columbus team.
Yeah.
He stood out. And he really, especially what happened with Johnny Gaudreau in the offseason and all the turmoil and just emotional stuff going on there, he stepped up and he played fantastic. And he did it all season long. So, I don't know. I think that was a bad pick. The voters, whoever the heck votes, but I don't know. That one was a little controversial. The Hart Trophy, I feel like, is the biggest snub. I don't know I know who the voters are, but what the hell are we doing here? Connor Hellebuck's the Hart Trophy winner. Like in a world does that make sense? First goalie to win it since I think 2015 and Corey Perry won the Hart Trophy, but what like
Carey Price,
Corey Perry. I'm Carey Price. Like I know he had a great season. He led the goalies in shutouts and goals against, and he had the second best save percentage, and he had eight winning streaks up the wazoo. The Jets were fantastic. This, that, and the other. But he's only the fourth goalie to win the Hart. Hasek's won it a couple times, Theodore with Montreal, and then Price with Montreal again. It's rarefied air to win this trophy. And holy, I don't know. I can't wrap my head up. Poor Nikita Kucherov. That's what I need to say. This guy, he came third in voting. Third, Tim, in voting for the Hart Trophy. He leads the league in points. He's so dynamic. He just does everything you want an elite superstar to do. And he continues to just get disrespected. You know what I mean? I just don't know what he needs to do to get the recognition that he deserves. Is it because he's Russian? Honestly, though. And that's an honest question. Do you think that plays a part in him not getting votes? Because there's no reason he shouldn't at least come second in voting. How does McKinnon get more votes than him? How?
Yeah, I don't know. And the thing with Nikuchar, obviously, he's kind of a polarizing player in terms of, well, I guess a little bit on the ice, but certainly the way he hair. Like, people are still mad about the All-Star game. You know what I mean? And the not trying and not, you know, even participating, really. That sort of stuff. Like, they hold on to that stuff a little bit. I think the writers are people, too. And I don't know. I was surprised by that.
Yeah, I don't know. It is what it is. I don't agree with it. I don't usually agree with these voting processes and who they pick and the reasoning behind why they pick, but good for Connor Hellebuck. He's a great goaltender. I don't think when I look at all the goaltenders in the league, I would pick him. Like I think he would be my pick if I'm playing one game. He's terrific. He really, really is. He gets obviously the black mark because of the playoffs. Like, he's just not a playoff goaltender so far. Time will tell. Maybe he picks it up, but I don't know. Special day for him. He got the trophies when he was fishing. Oh, very, very great. So I don't know. All right, moving on. There's some other news. Chris Kreider was traded from the New York Rangers to the Anaheim Ducks for a prospect and a third rounder and his full salary, by the way. His full salary going to Edmonton. What has Chris Drury done with this team, Tim, since he's just tried to revamp the whole roster?
Yeah, I think he deserves some credit for this. And I don't think he's done, but in the past year, he's gotten rid of nearly $18 million in cap space between Kreider, Trouba, and Goudreau. He didn't retain any salary on any of those deals. And it was about getting them off the books. It wasn't about the return. It was giving them flexibility to re-sign the guys they need to re-sign, to maybe make an offer sheet on the RFA market, or even, you know, sign some free agents on July 1st. This is opening up all kinds of possibilities to a team that desperately needs some changes. And Chris Kreider, you know, a lot of credit to him. And Pat Verbeek said, like, we're excited about his leadership. We're excited about what he does on the special teams, all this stuff. Who knows? People on Twitter are like, oh my God, are the Ducks a playoff team next year? Look at this roster. It's like, no, they're not. But yeah, I mean, I wish him all the best, and it would be really interesting to see what the Rangers do this summer.
What is Verbeek doing? I don't quite understand the reasoning behind getting this guy, especially like giving up picks and a prospect for him. He's 34 years old, just turned. He's played a million games. Like he's played a ton of games in the regular season and even more in the playoffs. Like he's logged a lot of minutes on his body, and he got 30 points this year. He had 8 goals. He was not good. So maybe he finds a fountain of youth. I don't know.
Doesn't it seem like he's going to be one of those guys that ages really poorly too?
I think he already has.
Yeah. I mean, he's a big body and he had a lot of speed, but he doesn't anymore. And I don't know. Hopefully he's going to have to be like a net front guy, you know, and that's what he does really well, but he's not going to move around much in the next couple of years.
Yeah. It's a very strange move for the Ducks to make. And apparently they're not done dealing. They're going to be in on every single player. They want to make this team better. I don't know how much this changes or moves the needle. They have a veteran guy already in Alex Killorn. They have Troy Terry. They have decent wingers. So we'll see. They have good players, but let's not get twisted. This is not a playoff team just yet. He's usually pretty frugal with his signings, but lately, like, he goes out and gets Jake Trouba. Maybe Chris Drury has something on him. You think that's the case? He's got some pitchers in a compromising situation where it's like, hey, someone's going to leak these to the New York Post. Oh, I'll take Trouba. Oh, you know, I'll take Kreider.
Kreider, Trouba. You also have Vetrano. You have Ryan Strome. There's a ton of former Rangers on this team now.
Yeah, and it's not going to work. So that's bad. But anyways, other news that is happening. Jeff Merrick said they're going to be in the running for Jason Robertson. Who cares? And then Frank Saravalli on the DFO rundown says, league sources have suggested that Martin Nietzsche's of the Colorado Avalanche is just throwing $9 million contracts out the window. He doesn't even want to see it. He wants more. He's that confident in his game. If you're Martin Nietzsche's and you're getting a contract thrown in front of your face for 8 years, $9 million, and you're throwing it out the window, oh boy. Like, is that a smart move by him? He's going to be a UFA after this season. Do you think this is a smart business move, Tim, by a guy who, you know, did well in Colorado, but his biggest point-getting season was in 2022-23 when he got 71 points. And it's just been a steady decline since then. 23-24, he had 53. 24-25, he had 55. So what are we looking at here with Martin Nietzsche? Is this a smart move? Do you think he deserves more than $9 million, Tim?
Well, he's starting to develop a little bit of a reputation because, you know, he wanted more ice time. He was outspoken about what happened in Carolina. He gets traded. He lights it up in Colorado. He's playing at a high octane, fast paced offense with McKinnon and McCarr and all these other guys. He does really well there. And then there's a report a couple of weeks ago that he's not thrilled about his time in Colorado. I don't know if it was like his exit meetings or his ice time or his line mates or what, but something about he always wants more. He wants more. He wants more. And now he's saying he's worth more than $9 million a year over 8 years, whatever the number is going to be. It's just, you're 26 years old. And I like the idea like of betting on yourself and wanting to prove that you can be better than you've been given opportunities to be, but you've gotten opportunities and you're a good player. Like he thinks he's a superstar that doesn't get the recognition he deserves. And I don't know why that's being a very good player isn't enough. So we'll see what he does this year. He's under contract for one more year. Hopefully he stays in Colorado and puts up, you know, 90 plus points with McKinnon, and then he go and earns a big contract. But he hasn't earned anything besides that yet.
And let me correct myself. He did have a good year this year. I was looking at it just as Carolina stats. He had like over a point per game this year. So he did have a great season. So what do I know? But I do feel like if you're a player, and we've seen this a few times, Anthony Duclair comes to mind. I'm going to bet on myself. This is that. The team controls your ice time. And so if you're not investing in them and it comes midway through the season, I don't know what happens with your ice time. I don't know if you're going to see the opportunities that you should see if you're under contract long term. Maybe I'm wrong. Jared Bednar might not think that way, but I don't know. They could scuttle your value pretty quick. Second power play unit, not as many offensive zone faceoffs. Next thing you know, you're not getting primo ice time with McKinnon, and you're on the second line playing with Brock Nelson. Nichushkin gets bumped up. There are ways to devalue you. So you have to know when you're in a good situation. And yeah, $72 million. Like that's life-changing money. And to think that you're going to ruin that or gamble that just because you want $80 million or $90 million. Like how, at that point, it's, you won't even notice it. Like, right. It's just right. Another zero in the bank account at that point. I could see if you were a low level guy and you want to go from 800 to like 1.3. That's big difference there. But when you're the difference between $9 and $11 million, like what is it? Another car? Like what else would you buy with that money? So anyways, good for him. He's betting on himself. We will see how it plays out. Colorado, they don't seem like they play around. They let Rantanen go. So we'll, I don't know how this works out, but I'm rooting for the Avalanche. I find myself not rooting for Nitro. It's just, I don't know. Just take the money, man. You earned it. Just go and then play with McKinnon for the rest of your life. That's a good situation to be in. Anyways, everybody, a good situation we find ourselves in. It's the end of the show, and we get to have a Stanley Cup game tomorrow night. It's nice, back-to-back. We appreciate the support. We will talk to you guys next week. Tim, anything else?
No, thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.
All right, everybody. Cheers.
It's time. The British and Irish Lions journey down under.
This is a fairy tale!
Legends will be written. And Lions will be made. The British and Irish Lions series. Watch every match, including all three tests, live on Sky Sports.
Absolutely incredible!
Available to stream with Now. 18 plus UK only. Broadband 2.5 megabytes per second required.
Here we are. A couple of pints.
Great. Neck oil, yeah?
As requested. So, what did you get up to this weekend?
Well, funny story, actually. I befriended this panda, discovered he had a beautiful singing voice. Taught him how to harmonise. We got a record deal, went on tour, went platinum in Basingstoke, then broke up due to creative differences.
Right. So that's why there's a panda giving you the finger from across the street, then?
That's right, brother.
Stick your neck out. Beaver Town. Never normal. Visit drinkaware.co.uk. Enjoy Beaver Town beer responsibly.